Good evening, everyone. I am delighted to see you here during a very civically involved week, what with debate watch parties and activism and protests on vital issues, and several local candidate and issue fora taking place in Ann Arbor. In fact, I like to think of this evening as a capstone for a week of studying and celebrating democratic participation in our city. Thanks to Ken and the Ann Arbor District Library for graciously providing this wonderful community gathering space. I would like to especially thank the board of A2 Ethics and the Friends of A2 Ethics for supporting and backing this whole project, and particularly Joanna DeCamp and our summer intern, Shoam Giva, who helped to organize this event. At the same time, I'd like to single out the League of Women Voters of the Ann Arbor area, the local president, Nancy Shuey, who's out here you are, you came in, and Zoe Banke, and as well Mary Morgan, the executive director of Civ City Initiative, for their help in planning and publicizing Gina and Michelle's visit. I am really pleased to be able to tell you a bit about Gina and Michelle. Gina Franconi is the director of the budget for Cambridge, Massachusetts, and she directs a $658 million operating and capital budget. She is also responsible for overseeing the reserve. She coordinates the reserve policies, the debt service, and investment services for the city of Cambridge, and she has been doing this since 2012. Before that, she's actually worked for the city of Cambridge for 12 years, and she began this current position in 2012, and one of her programs is the Innovative Participatory Budget Initiative. She has also a one-and-a-half or one-year-old and a three-year-old, which she brought them to Ann Arbor because she is a Michigan native and is originally from Grand Rapids, and she's a very proud Michiganian. Michelle Monsinger is the budget analyst for the Participatory Budgeting Initiative. She's in charge of coordinating and managing the volunteers for putting together the voter outreach, the vote outreach projects, and for helping the volunteers work with city staff. She has done this since 2014. Before that, she worked for the U.S. Department of State for 5 years. Michelle has a BA from Georgetown University and an MA from the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. She is from a small town in Massachusetts called Harvard, which I found out is 25 miles northwest of Boston. We are very pleased that they have come this evening, and not only are we celebrating and studying democratic participation this evening, but we are also celebrating people who work for city and local government. So thank you. Please welcome Gina and Michelle.
Thank you, Janine, for the thoughtful intro. I'm Gina Franconi, the budget director, and this is Michelle, the budget analyst. Mm-hmm. And we are delighted to be here to talk about something in our everyday life called participatory budgeting. But before we get into our program, I just would really like to thank Janine and the team from A2 Ethics, the League of Women Voters, and Civ City for hosting us. It's we're really happy to be here, and we hope that you like what we have to say. All right. You want the honors? All right, so participatory budgeting. Before we talk about that, I thought I'd give you just a snapshot of what the city of Cambridge is. And we are a city of about 109,000 people. That might sound familiar to you because I believe Ann Arbor, the demographics are similar. 30% of our residents speak another language besides English at home. 76% of our residents have a four-year degree or more. And 32% of our residents are in college or are grad students. We are fortunate that on one side of City Hall is MIT and on the other side is Harvard. And their logos are there. So what is participatory budgeting? It is a democratic process where we invite residents to directly decide how to spend a part of our public budget. And this was brought to the City of Cambridge by one of our city councilors, Councilor Chung. He had an interaction with the mayor from Portugal who talked to him about it. And he came back to the city and he said, could we do this? Is this possible? And we thought, we're not sure. What does that entail? Let's do some research. And so I went back with the budget team and we looked into what it would involve. And my boss was like, I'm still not sure about this. And I said, come on, you got to give me a chance. Let me see what this is like. Let's just go for it. And so he took a chance on it. Not a chance, really, but he agreed. And we've been doing it ever since. Sorry, Michelle, is this a good idea? we found this video. It's by the Participatory Budgeting Project. They're a nonprofit out of New York. And they helped us for the first 2 years with participatory budgeting. I'm going to call it PB for short from now on because it's a mouthful. But they put this video together, and we think it's kind of a nice intro as to what the PB process looks like. So Matt, I think, in the back of the room is going to help us put that on.
All right, if you live in this community and you pay taxes, come out and vote. Decide how your tax dollars get spent.
Participatory budgeting gives people real power over real money to make the decisions that affect their lives. It's a democratic process in which ordinary community members directly decide to spend part of the public budget.
Oh, this is different because you're actually voting for where the money is going to be spent instead of allowing them to decide where to spend the money.
Who knows better about their community than the people that live in their community?
Not be afraid of the big words, participatory budgeting. It sounds boring, but it's the opposite of that.
So how does it work? First, people brainstorm ideas. They come together in meetings and assemblies and start to think of what kinds of projects they would like to see in their neighborhood.
We had to think big. We have $1 million that we could use so we can fund parks, health issues, streets.
Volunteers work with experts to turn people's initial ideas into full project proposals.
We started with maybe about 40 projects, and so we had a series of budget delegate meetings, and we narrowed down the list into about 4 or 5 projects.
We met with the Parks Department, and we talked about what we wanted to see change in some of the parks and how we were going to work with them.
What are the real needs of the community? If you only have a certain amount of money, what is it that you can do that's going to benefit as many people as possible?
I'm dreaming of new benches, modern benches. Seniors have nowhere to go.
Displays at bus shelters throughout the district, and it'll tell people when the next bus is due to arrive.
We're asking for a projector and 30 Mac laptops.
State-of-the-art team fitness center.
They put solar panels on a firehouse.
After volunteers share the top projects, the community gets ready to vote.
It's a way of validating every voice in our community and saying, you know what, whatever your position is, you live in our community, you have a right to decide, and that me as a representative and government should respond and should listen to that voice. Anybody could vote in this process, immigrants, whether you're documented or not, young people that normally don't get to vote.
Most people, they don't even know that 16-year-olds can come out here and vote today. Some of them are really surprised. They said, really? I said, yes. They have a voice.
Projects with the most votes get funded.
The Red Hook Library Community Garden.
Yeah.
Right here.
The projects are then implemented over the next few years. And the following year, the process starts again. People brainstorm new ideas, turn them into new projects, vote on them, and fund more improvements for their community. PB becomes part of the budget process. It becomes a new way of governing.
I think this is like the greatest wave of democracy coming into the United States. It started in Porto Alegre, Brazil in 1989.
From there, it spread all over Latin America to over 1,500 cities around the world. In Toronto, public housing tenants have decided how to spend millions of dollars on improvements to their buildings. City council members in Chicago, New York, and other cities have engaged thousands of residents in allocating discretionary funds. Entire cities have launched PB, such as in Vallejo, California, for funds from a sales tax, and in Boston for youth funds. Even schools and universities have used PB.
This was a great opportunity for you to be a part of government and better the city you live in. Who wouldn't want to take advantage of that?
You're creating a more educated platform of voters overall. So I think this can only be good for the big project of democracy.
I like that video. It just one of my favorite parts of participatory budgeting is getting to be in a room or some space with residents, and just to hear their enthusiasm is just really what this process is all about. So when I watch that video, I get really excited, because just to hear all the positivity and the residents, particularly from New York, it's just it's really uplifting for me. But back to the presentation. So there were some initial questions and concerns before we started participatory budgeting, and one was community buy-in. For us, we're a pretty well-run organization or a well-run city, and we had been holding finance meetings throughout the community for several years, and we would get, you know, two people to show up. Nobody was really worried about the financing of the city. So where do we start? How are we going to do the outreach for a process like this where the word budgeting is in the title? How are we going to get people to come out? So that was the main concern. Another one was, oh, here come the usual suspects. You know, when our city council meetings start at 5:30, and you can pretty much count, oh, yep, he's there, yep, all five of them, they're going to show up. And so what are we going to do with them? And how are we, you know, how are we going to entertain them through this process? Or how are we going to, you know, offset that negativity they're going to bring? So that was another question. And how much money are we going to allocate? And this piece can be tricky. And so my boss, he said, why don't we give $100,000 to the process? And I said, you've got to be joking. I need $1 million. You know, so we met somewhere in the middle, and he said, okay, let's do $500,000 and see how it works. So there's, you know, there's a lot of discussion, and this is how our process works. And so it's not how New York's works or Chicago. And so you'll be able to build and design your own process that fits within your community. Another question was, well, what about staff time? And what are we going to need? And so this is a pretty big undertaking. And we have a budget office, and it has four analysts in it now, and Michelle, who leads the PB process. 70% of her time is spent on participatory budgeting for the entire year. City departments also have to be involved, and you also have to have buy-in from them, because we need them in order to support the projects and proposals going forward. The city manager and the city council, we need their support as well. But we also need for the process to be transparent. And we have to make sure and emphasize to the city manager and city council that this is not a process where they'll be making decisions. It's really about the community coming together and making these decisions. And so we really had to be thoughtful about that and make sure that our process, and we try and run it as transparent as we can so that the residents do understand that. And again, I'll plug the participatory budgeting project. They were with us for the first 2 years. We've taken the training wheels off, and we're on our own now. But part of Michelle's job really is to, she plans the entire process. And she coordinates all of the meetings that happen. We have a terrific website, and she blogs on there. She's always putting updates on there. She emails everybody. So communication is key in this process as well. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Michelle, and she's going to get more into the process for you. So, Michelle.
Thank you, Gina. Hello, everyone. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the nuts and bolts now. Like, what does PB actually look like in Cambridge? How does it work? Going to walk you through the phases of our process. And we tried to put a lot of pictures and visuals here so you can really see what I'm talking about. So after we get over those initial questions, we figure out the timeline in Cambridge, which for us runs from basically June through December every year. We launch the planning phase, which will happen a little bit before that, maybe in May. And the first thing we do is recruit a group of volunteers who are either your steering committee or your outreach committee. In the first 2 years, we had a steering committee, and these are folks from last year. And their job really is to guide the overall PB process. So this is something that communities do when they're just starting, and these people are in charge of sort of making the rules, figuring out who can participate and how. So, for example, in Cambridge, they decided that our minimum voting age should be 12 years old. And they decided that non-U.S. citizens should be able to vote in our process, and we support both of those things. The reason I say it's now an outreach committee is because we don't need to decide these things year after year. We want our process to be consistent. So now they're an outreach committee, and they help us just get out the word, get more people to vote, and submit ideas every year, things like that. The rule book is sort of what just outlines what the city departments are responsible for, what our volunteers do, kind of outlines just like the rules of PB and how everything's going to work. And then idea collection starts. So for us, in June and July every year, we collect ideas from the community. And we use this interactive online map tool that you guys can see right here. This is an outline of Cambridge, and every single one of those little pins on the map is an idea that someone submitted. When you click on a pin, it zooms in, and it tells you exactly what it is. So this idea was submitted by someone named Kristen Martin, and it's for a community garden in the Wellington-Harrington neighborhood of Cambridge. So then she describes her idea. And then you can comment below, so other people say, I really like this idea, this would be great, the community garden should have these features. And at the top on the right, you can click a little heart that says you support this, so there's 55 supports. We really like this tool because it created a lot of dialogue and conversation between people who are submitting ideas and just other interested folks in the community. Plus, when you see this map, it's really fun just to click around and see what kind of ideas are people thinking of. I think you guys are going to do a mini exercise in that tonight because I think you all have little yellow idea cards. And if you take a minute through this presentation and just write down an idea about a project or a program that you'd like to see in Ann Arbor, that's kind of a mini idea collection exercise. And maybe we'll ask a couple of you guys to share towards the end of the process. There's more cards on the back if someone needs to grab one. So the first year, we received 340 ideas. In the past 2 years, it's jumped to about 540 ideas. That's quite a few ideas to go through, and ultimately 20 end up on a ballot. So how do we get there? Besides this online tool, we collect ideas. We have our volunteers and ourselves from the budget office. We're at community events and festivals all over town in the summer doing tables like this, talking to people about PB and what ideas they might have. And sometimes ideas come to us. So one Friday this summer, we were visited by a class of second and third graders from a summer school, which was pretty cool. They're younger than 12, but they still worked for a month with their teacher in three different groups, and they thought of three different ideas that they wanted to submit to our participatory budgeting process. The ideas were for a homeless shelter, for cleaning our subway stations, and for making a public pool in one of the neighborhoods. And they calculated how much they thought these ideas would cost, and they even figured out how much it would cost to pay the lifeguards at the pool, and that you could earn some revenue back from a snack bar at the pool to sort of offset some of the costs of the project. So it was really cool to see people this young thinking about how they would like to help the community and engaging in sort of budgetary work and bringing it right into the city. So we thought that was awesome. So the first part of this, the next phase, proposal development, is figuring out, of these 540 ideas, which ones are feasible, which ones can we actually spend the money on. In Cambridge, our PB funds are for capital projects only, so it's infrastructure. Think of things that are physical, something that you would fix, repair, renovate, install, build, that type of thing. For us, it also involves Wi-Fi and any apps. So every year we get a lot of projects about free public internet. It has to be a one-time expenditure. So even though Cambridge is lucky in that we're very resource-rich, we still need to control budget growth, and so these projects are things we can do one time. This year we have $700,000 to spend on the winning projects. We've been adding about $100,000 each year that we do this, and we're in our third cycle right now. The projects, of course, have to benefit the public, and they also have to be implemented on city property. So usually a lot of things are not eligible because they're on state land, or they're the MBTA, our subway network, that's actually not city property, so things like that. Our volunteers, though, they look at all the ideas, trying to pull out the essence of the idea. So if this isn't eligible because of the location, can we do it somewhere else in Cambridge? If it's not eligible because it's not quite a capital project, it's more operating, can we capture the spirit of the idea another way that would be eligible? We push people to submit everything because we also use this as a tool for communication with the city. So we send the list of 540 ideas to all the city departments and the city manager, and so it just serves to show, it's kind of a neat way to kind of gauge the feeling in the community about what people think is needed and what the greatest needs are. All right, so our next big group of volunteers, we call them budget delegates in Cambridge. The first 2 years we had about 35 to 40 folks. This year we had over 60 sign up, which is really exciting. This is the group of people who are going to research all 540 of those ideas that come in. So it's really a ground-up process. It's not like people submit ideas and then we in the budget office say, we like these 20 the best, and this is what we're going to let people vote on. People in the community submit ideas, people in the community research them, and ultimately determine which ones make it to that ballot, and then people in the community vote on them. So this year, because we had so many people, we made 5 budget delegate committees. We basically just divide the 540 ideas into categories. So one is street smarts, that has everything to do with bikes, street repair, potholes, parking. One's parks and recreation, so all the ideas related to parks, playgrounds. We get cool ideas like adult playgrounds because they're trying to promote stress relief and kind of getting back to your inner child. We have a committee for health, environment, and safety. So everything, that's where a lot of ideas come in about affordable housing, about homelessness, about having little food pantries or mobile shower trucks for the homeless, lighting and different safety-related things. And then the last one is culture and community facilities, which usually deals with public art, performance spaces, libraries, and the senior centers in town. The fifth committee is our Youth Budget Delegate Committee. So this is something we've been doing for the past 2 years. It's a group of high school students, and it's run out of one of our youth centers. And they this year, they're doing all the projects related to the free public internet, to our youth centers, and to schools. So just like the other committees, they meet every single week from August through October. It's a very intense volunteer commitment. And they whittle down these lists. Usually the first step they do is they divide the list into subgroups and kind of split up and say, I want to work on the public art projects and you can work on the performance space projects. So everyone kind of takes a manageable chunk of the ideas that come into research. We also organize these 2 speed dating nights with city staff. So our volunteers need to consult a lot with different departments to figure out what is feasible, what's already in the city's capital plan, what stuff is being taken care of outside of the PB process, what's not city property, et cetera. So we basically, you know, take a room this size and we have city staff at different tables around the room. This is the public works table right there. And then the week before, our volunteer committees prepare questions about the different projects that they're researching, and they move around the room and get all of their questions answered. We just find it's easy to connect people face-to-face. Sometimes one project may involve 3 different departments, depending on what it is, and it's also another good place for communication and dialogue. I think a lot of our departments, sometimes their interactions with the public tend to be when people are complaining about something. So this is one case where you just have a lot of collaboration. Our volunteers are coming in and trying to learn about how the city plans for bike infrastructure, community gardens, public art, things like that. So it's a good exchange of ideas there. At the end of this long process, the budget delegates, they submit to the city a short list of proposals. There's going to be 20 projects on the ballot, but they may submit 30 or 40 total because they know that some won't make it through the final vetting by the city staff and the city manager. We just make sure that everything meets the legal requirements of capital projects and that everything's good to go. Once the city manager gives his final, he does his final review of the list, anything that makes it to the ballot and wins, the city will implement. So at the end of the process, once they know the 20 projects, the budget delegates, they each make a poster board. I think you saw a couple pictures of that in the video too. So they're sort of like old school science fair displays. People have a lot of fun making them. And then we display these at voting events throughout the week in December. So our vote every year in December, it happens before the holidays, so we can wrap up nicely and include the final projects in our city budget, which gets put together between January and April of the next year. It's 1 week long, and you can vote online and in person. So online, Stanford University actually makes our online ballot for free. They do that for many PB communities. So you can vote online. We sort of do this through an honor system. We have people as young as 12-year-olds voting. We have people who are non-U.S. citizens voting. We can't really have a formal voter registration process. We also trust our residents and know that people, it's really hard to get people to vote one time, so we're not really worried about PB voter fraud. So in addition to doing it online, we have about 30 events around town. We have the ballot available in multiple languages, usually six or seven. And we let people choose five of the 20 final projects on the ballot. It's not ranked, it's just pick your favorite five. Whichever ones get the most votes, the city will fund until we run out of the $700,000 we've got this year. We wanted to do a little exercise and ask you guys what you would vote for. We're going to hand out our ballot from the first year and let you guys make the decision in a few minutes. As Gina's handing those out, so there's an example of some of the ballots in different languages. The most popular in our community are Haitian Creole, Portuguese, Spanish, Chinese, and Amharic. The first year, we had about 2,700 people vote in participatory budgeting. That increased by 53% to about 4,200 people voting the second year. I would love to add a zero to that amount in the end and really just get those numbers up this third year, so we'll see what happens this December. Our goal at a minimum is to get more people to vote in PB, or the same amount of people to vote in PB as they do for the city council. So take a minute, you guys have the ballot. You can choose up to your favorite five projects, and then we'll tell you what won during the first year.
Would anybody like to share what their favorite idea or proposal was, or something that caught their eye before I do the big reveal? Yes. The toilet for all. Mm-hmm. That's good. Yep, traffic garden, another good one. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, Wi-Fi. Yep, bilingual books, I hear that. Bike repair station. Wow, this is a good crowd.
You guys are good.
Yeah. So in our first year, the Garden of Peace, another popular one. For our first cycle, these are the winners. Show their ranking. So we had new trees, laptops for our community learning center, and the bilingual books for children, the public toilet in Central Square, eight bike repair stations, and free public Wi-Fi. So wonderful job on the guesses out there. So if you want to see what the public toilet is, because most people do, this is the public toilet, and it is called the Portland Loo, and it's out in Portland, Oregon, and it's working. We have one in Harvard Square, and so far it's working really well. The one that was funded through PB is about to go into Central Square. They're working on the utilities underground, but that's about to be implemented hopefully this fall. Great question. She was asking about what happens, the public toilet, it requires maintenance, and that is true. And that was one of the proposals that came through, and the city vetted it out, and we took it to the city manager, and we said, we know this doesn't really qualify for participatory budgeting, but we have had so many discussions with residents and throughout the entire PB process, this was so important, and we just wanted to bring it to your attention. And we understand if you say that it cannot go on the ballot because it requires such a great amount of maintenance. And he said, because the residents feel it's important and they wanted to put it through this process, let's put it on the ballot and see what happens. And so he made that commitment. It won, and we're moving forward with it. So we're really fortunate. Again, like I said, we're an incredibly well-managed community. And our city manager, he means what he says. So the winners up here, this is from our second cycle. The top-ranked project was a food rescue freezer van. So it's going around the community, mainly to Harvard, MIT. And when they have food, we can repackage it, and then it goes out for deliveries to our food pantries and folks in need. And that was the top winner there. Bike lanes, water refill stations, more signage and sharrows for bikes, painting more bike lanes. Bikes were pretty big last year. Getting one of our buses to go faster through the community with a transponder so that the lights stay green a little bit longer so it can make it through. And new chairs for some of the schools in the community. Between these two lists, what really strikes me is we are a community of 13 neighborhoods, and people voted for what they thought was most important for the community as a whole and not what was just going to be right in their own section of town. And I just, I'm just really so happy to be in such a community and work for the residents of this community. Because I think that they're doing just a tremendous job. And the volunteers who start with us, it's just the time commitment they put in. And towards the end, we throw a party at the end to celebrate. And we do this, we celebrate all of the winners. And even for the folks who worked on ideas that didn't make it, because we have 20 on the ballot, there isn't any, we find that nobody's upset in the room. Everybody is, it's just such a joyous occasion. And that, I think, is what makes Cambridge great, is that we're all in it together. And regardless if your project wins or not, everybody's still really excited. And the process really works for us. At the end of the process, we do an evaluation, and for the past 2 years, we've had a Harvard grad student do it. What, again, you are a community with a university inside, and we really try and use that talent that's right around us. And so this year, we are also using another grad student who is along the way with us putting the evaluation together. But we ask a lot of questions, not only demographics, but people who volunteered as budget delegates, people who helped with the vote, everybody. We just want to hear what everybody thought about the process and how we can make it better. And in this, this is our third year, and we are also now going to try and measure impact. Mm-hmm. And not only is it the impact of the projects, but also the impact of the process. And so maybe Janine will invite us back and we can share the results of what that is. Also, because just because the process ends and the vote is over doesn't mean our work is over. And so what we do, this is a shot from our website, is these are all of the projects that won, and then we kind of tell you where we are in implementation. And so we really want to make sure that everybody knows that, you know, things are moving forward. Just because the vote finished, that we're still working on it. Michelle, she asked city departments for updates all the time so that everybody feels like, you know, this is really working. And we heard their voice and, you know, their process or their projects are moving forward. And we like to brand things, too. So all of the bilingual books last fall, when they were ordered, they all have a nice little sticker on them that say, that they were purchased through PB, and same thing with the laptops at the Community Learning Center. We're working on tags for the trees, so those just went in, so we're trying to figure out a way that we can tag the trees without hurting the tree and being able to sustain the weather, I think, yeah. So thank you for listening to us, and now we'd like to open it up for questions. Yes.
I'm just curious, do you have any project that receive a lot of opposition? In Ann Arbor, we've been wanting to develop a day shelter for the homeless, so they wouldn't come all at the library and they would have a place to go and put their packs during the day. And we couldn't get this idea moving forward with the city council.
I think in terms of projects that made it to the ballot, there were not many get much opposition at all. I think the public toilet was a bit controversial because some people felt, so most people supported it, but then when you go to the area, Central Square is sort of a business district, all of the businesses support it, but not in front of their door, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, that's trickier in terms of figuring out where exactly to put it, a place that's safe, that's visible, that's got the utility connections, and that's not necessarily blocking anyone or, you know, bringing a certain crowd right to the front of a store. The only other one that I got calls about was last year and was actually for a community garden project, which surprised me. But open space, unlike here, open space is a really big issue in Cambridge. We're 110,000 people in 6.5 square miles, and so there's just not a lot of, there's green space, but anytime you want to change the use of a park, you sort of get the community garden group, the dog group, the playground group. So there's a lot of people sort of who have different ideas about that space. So that was the only other one. But for the most part, people are very supportive of what ends up making it to the ballot.
So once a project is approved and funded, it's up to city departments to make them happen.
Yes, that's right. And so we have the support of the city departments from the beginning because we need them. They're a partner in this process. And so when we do that two rounds of speed dating, they are talking with our volunteers to say, like, yes, this is feasible, or no, this is not. And so they've heard the ideas before, and so they know they're coming. And then the city manager, we have his full support and says, this one, you need to figure out a way to make this happen.
I have two questions. So my first question is, Gina, a little more discussion on how to get something like this approved. What are the obstacles? How do you go about it? And then my second question is, would the excitement in the community be as large if it was a $50,000 amount of money that you had? I mean, we're well managed too, but I don't think we have $500,000. You know, it might be, if it's $50,000, do you still have that level of enthusiasm?
Okay, so the the obstacles. I think we were fortunate that it came from a city councilor, this idea, and it was presented to the city, and how open our city manager is to new ideas and opportunities to engage with the public. And so I think that if it, well, I think we're really fortunate. So I could understand how maybe the city might be a little hesitant about it. I mean, our senior staff certainly was at the beginning, and now it's, you know, it's the best program. I'm going to say it's the best program the city runs. So, and about the $50,000, I think that if that's where you have to start, if that's where you have to begin, then let's try it. But I think people need a reality check as to what $50,000 can buy in the city. And so if you are upfront with people about what the parameters are in the beginning, then I think you have a shot.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about how you created the rule book. I forgot what it was called, and sort of was it a lot based on best practices and sort of how you molded that to your community?
Sure. So the rule book, in the first 2 years when we were still working with the participatory budgeting process project, they basically have sort of a template for rule books, and we change the parameters so that they apply to our community. And then we had discussions with the steering committee. There's sort of one or two meetings where they're going through the rule book, talking about kind of making those decisions about what the voting age should be. Is 12 too young? Is 12 young enough? Do we want to include, how inclusive do we want this process to be? And in Cambridge, they want it to be very inclusive. The rule books are available on our website in case you want to check them out. They're only about like maybe 10 pages long. It's kind of like a half page booklet, but they're pretty much just saying this is what the budget department's responsible for. City staff are responsible for advising the delegates for implementing the projects, just kind of putting all that stuff out up front so everyone knew what the roles and responsibilities of the volunteers in the city were. And it's kind of something that we can be held to. You know, it says in there we have to implement the projects. It says in there that this is what you have to do to get a proposal on the ballot and that it'll be done once it's voted on. So it's just a way to sort of solidify those things and have everything in writing.
I imagine people get very invested in these projects. So I'm just curious about the human dynamics. Do you ever have any sore losers? Or do people get so energized by the process that even if their project isn't funded, do they come back again and participate and maybe change their strategies a little?
I think that I haven't seen a sore loser, and especially when we throw the results party at the end, and just the whole room just lights up and comes together as we announce who the winners are. As Michelle said earlier, once people are invested and PB is just such a feel-good, warm and fuzzy process, that they do come back. And maybe being a budget delegate 1 year, they need, you know, a break because it is such a time commitment so that they help and volunteer in another way. So maybe they're on our outreach committee or help put together some voting events or because we do, we hold about 30 events throughout the community. So volunteers are key, and we need them in so many ways. And so there's always a way to help out. But yes, we like it when we see people come back. But it's also really great when we see new faces who want to come into this process. Because really, we do try and reach out to all corners of the city.
Does it ever turn out that the estimated cost is not correct? And what happens if it falls short? I mean, if it costs more than was expected.
That is a great question. We haven't really seen a lot of overages at all. And so what is great about the process is that the delegates are working with city staff who one of their jobs is to be able to price out things. But the city is held responsible to make sure that the project does get up and running. We would never come back and say, oh, we're out of money, it's over budget, sorry, put it in next year. We would certainly fund it if there was a really, whatever the case, we would still fund the project.
I just wonder, more people vote now in local election since you've started this project?
We have only run the process two times, and our voter percentage has increased by 53% from year one to year two, and we are in annual process, and everybody votes for participatory budgeting in the first week of December, whereas the municipal election, there's other things that are tied to it in November. So we are not connected to the municipal, state, or any other election. So we kind of host our own vote week. We are hopeful that we will continue to see those increases and meet the same numbers that the municipal election brings out.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on that. I think what you're getting at is whether the PB process is encouraging people to participate in local elections and sort of generally civic life. And whether you, it may be too early to tell, but is there any kind of correlation that you see between the participation in PB and then just general participation in civic life locally?
I think that that's one of the things that we'd like to try and measure this year. As I was mentioning in our evaluation, we're going to start looking at the impact of the process and seeing what voters have to say about their engagement in civic life and potentially around how they feel about voting and also with the municipal elections. And that's another reason why it's so great to see that the voting age for this process is 12 years old, because we're trying to get those young people to start being civically engaged so that when they get their voter card that they're ready to go.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your efforts to increase transparency? How are you, what kinds of mechanisms are you using?
So I think that the map is a really wonderful tool, so you can see all of the ideas that everybody is submitting. And not only can you see them, but you're also able to comment and interact with the map. And one of the things that we do around transparency is after the ballot comes out and the 20 projects are on the ballot, what we do after that process is we go back, we ask throughout this, when the budget delegates are working, we ask for them to give us a response as to why they didn't push an idea through. And so at the end of that process, Michelle goes back in and she responds to every single idea on the map and says why the idea didn't move forward. And so it may be that it was not capital, so it's ineligible. It wasn't on city property. It might be that the committee didn't feel that there was a great need for this in that area because there's already such and such around the corner. And so we really try and make an effort to comment back to everybody so that they know where their idea ended in the process and why. Through the vote, a majority of our voters are online. And so we also, we post the vote and we try and be as transparent also in the process through the evaluation. Thank you, Dan.
We also just try to put as much as we can on our website so you can find the voting breakdown, the results for how all of the projects did, which how many people voted for them on paper versus online. We try to keep a blog about the latest meetings between the budget delegates and city staff. And so we have kind of a record of the first two cycles, and now we're building the record of our third. But we try to put it all up there so that it's accessible and it's kind of there for perpetuity.
Have you found that just having the voting online skews the demographics, though? I mean, what kinds of efforts are you making with people who don't have technologies that they can use in order to vote? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we are around town, buzzing like bees, really. Michelle and the rest of the team, during vote week, we are out at the senior centers, the youth centers, the schools. We go to the housing authority developments. Mm-hmm. We try and we're at the community learning center where a lot of those programs are for people who speak a second language. And so we really try hard to get at those communities through our paper ballots. And again, we have our ballots translated into 6 different languages besides English. And am I missing anything? What else are we doing?
Just about the online voting. So the way it works is, for any of you guys who have Gmail, it kind of works like that. So you put your cell phone number in, we text you a code, and then you use that code to access a ballot one time. So if you don't have a cell phone, or say there's 4 people in your house but only 2 cell phones, you can also email or call us for a code if you've got internet at home but not a cell phone. Some people think that you need a smartphone. You don't need a smartphone. You just need the ability to get that text message, or you can just call us. So that's kind of one way. Sometimes people think, I'm not able to vote online if I don't have a cell phone. So that was something we sort of changed between the first and second year and tried to get the word out more. It also meant we were in the office answering phone calls till like midnight on the last night of voting. But we don't want anyone to call or email and not get a response. We don't want anyone who wants to participate feel like they couldn't participate. And we do try to target, as Gina said, the in-person voting events to those areas where it's folks who may have less resources or who may not be as tech savvy. Mm-hmm. Did anyone write down on the little cards, or did you think of something throughout this presentation that you think, or even if you just want to share like issues in Ann Arbor that you think you'd like to address? Sometimes when we're doing these idea collection events, it's easier for people to think in the frame of, what do I want to fix? What would I like to see changed? And then kind of come up with a project that might address that. Along those lines, we've got an idea this year that came in, something called kinetic energy tiles. But basically, they're things that would help melt the snow in the winter if we put them in certain well-used walkways. I don't know if that will make it to the ballot or not, but we also hear several ideas about snow removal in Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
We do.
Not as much as here, but we get some.
Yeah. Is there another idea on this side? So just to repeat, the idea was about having mainstream, having downtown Ann Arbor converted into a pedestrian mall in the summer and some other times. Good question. The question was, how long does it take for the projects to actually get implemented and completed? If I go to the list really quick. So some of the easier ones, like the bilingual books for children learning English and the laptops for the Community Learning Center, those were the easiest. Those were done within 6 months. Where the books are still kind of circulating. They try to keep them going throughout the community. We were able to purchase about 500. And the laptops are in the Community Learning Center. That only took a few months to be implemented. The Wi-Fi stations just got completed. That took about a year. And so our goal is to have all the projects completed within the fiscal year that the money is available for. Some things, the toilet, we know is going to take the longest. The city was waiting for the Harvard Square toilet to come online first so we could kind of learn some lessons from how that worked, what worked well, what didn't work, before we just threw one in Central Square. But people, so far people know, like they've been fairly patient. We get a couple calls here and there, but we try to keep people updated on the website, like Gina showed earlier, this page. And we send out email updates, like especially to our volunteers too, who are pretty well connected into the different neighborhood groups, to just say, here's kind of the status of stuff. But we're committed to doing all of them.
Just a quick question. I'm wondering if you engage the community through other outlets. For example, here in Ann Arbor, we have something called, we engage the community in assessing their priorities for parks improvements. Mm-hmm. And we do this when we update our parks, recreation, and open space plan. So we do these surveys online through our city website, and we publicize that we're doing this. We also, for housing and human service needs, we work with other area organizations, foundations, but a lot of those efforts as well, we don't reach out to the community in the manner that you're doing here with participatory budgeting, but there are citizens committees that, you know, visit nonprofits, do assessments, read proposals. So we do... You know, we touch upon some of these areas, not all certainly, but and we're not taking this approach, which I think is fantastic. So my question is, do you have, in addition to this, other ways of determining what your park spending priority should be, or other, you know, housing, human service kinds of spending priorities, what those should be?
Yes, so this is just a small piece of the puzzle. This really is the bow on top for the community. So we do, we have an open space committee, and they meet regularly to talk about the condition of the parks and other spaces. And we have a human services commission, and they meet regularly. So we have many different commissions and organizations that are constantly meeting. This is kind of just like like I said, it's the cherry on the top, and any of the creative ideas that aren't put in our capital budget. We have a capital budget of $80 million, and so I think we do a pretty good job of, you know, having a five-year streets and sidewalks plan and all of those types of things, but it's more about, like, what are things that we don't have in the plan that residents would really like to see.
We have a five-year capital improvement budget and plan, and then which we update annually. And then we also we spend about $50 million annually on capital improvements.
Okay. That's great.
I have another idea, and we have a nonprofit group called Common Cycle,
and there are a number of bike advocates, and what they do is they're down at our farmer's market every Sunday for 4 hours teaching people how to repair their bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
And right now they are looking for a space that they could have to store their equipment, a small space, and sort of to have a home base.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a great group. They also go out to public housing and low-income areas and teach children how to repair their bikes, maintain them, provide some bikes. And one of the problems is with our capital improvement plan, there is a minimum dollar amount to even get considered for the capital improvement plan. So if you had a $200,000 request, like we now have these bikes, I'm not sure what it's called, but we have these bike stations, and then you can pay a lot of money to ride the bike. So the city funded that because it was a large amount of money, but these small amounts of money, there's not really a process to get them in before the public, and I see this as being an excellent way if someone just needs 10 or 20,000 or even less.
Yeah, I like that angle because it kind of speaks to what Jane was talking about. If you only had a $50,000 budget, like how could that work? But it sounds like if you have a minimum requirement to meet the capital budget, that sounds like a great idea.
Thanks.
What lessons have you learned?
I think the biggest one we learned the first year, we started sort of in that fall, and we ended up having the vote right in the middle of budget season and during 5 feet of snow on the ground. So the timeline the first year didn't work for anyone. We were sort of rushing to get the projects voted on before we finalized the budget. So it was just a tough time for city staff to be thinking about PB when they were handling the snow and putting their own budgets together. It's tough for us in the budget office to put the budget together and organize this process. And it was really tough for our volunteers just to meet or to do any site visits to research the projects when it was freezing out and the ground was covered in snow. So we shifted the timeline the following year. So that it kind of ran much more smoothly. It fits in with everyone's workloads more nicely, and the fall is much easier for our volunteers to kind of do their work. I think the other lesson we learned is we needed to give our volunteers some more time. So in the second and third cycles, their work is from August to October, and it's not as crammed. I think those are the two biggest things that we learned, yeah.
Thank you.
I want to thank Michelle and Gina for their very excellent presentation. As an ethicist, I'm very much struck by the fact that in your PB process, special interests and individual interests have not been part of this process, that they seem to be looking overall at the overall common good. This heartens me. Before we part, I do want to have Ana Paula Pimentel-Walker stand. She is a professor of urban and regional planning at the Taubman School. She's also from the area that originated and introduced to the world Porto Alegre, Brazil, participatory budgeting, and she has been studying it for almost two decades in Brazil and elsewhere, and so I really appreciate her coming to visit us and be with us this evening. At the same time, let us thank Michelle and Gina for a terrific talk, and thank you very much for coming.